Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we start today's episode, I'm excited to announce that Coin Corner have decided to continue their sponsorship of this podcast. If you haven't heard me talk about Coin Corner before, I spoke about them a lot during season 4 of Behind the Glass. They essentially make the world of buying and trading Bitcoin and cryptocurrency easier than ever. I'm sure lots of you have heard about Bitcoin in the news. Maybe you have friends who are constantly talking about it, or maybe you yourself are someone who buys and trades Bitcoin. Well, head over to coincorner.com/STG, because whether you're any of those people, I guarantee you'll find more information and an easier way to trade cryptocurrencies than ever before using Coin Corner. When you use that link, coincorner.com/STG, or my code STG when you sign up, you'll get some free SAT, which is sort of a very small unit of a Bitcoin. Bitcoin's value now is very high, and so therefore actually buying one whole Bitcoin, fairly expensive. So you can trade SAT, smaller increments of a Bitcoin. And yes, you'll get those free when you use that link, coincorner.com/STG, or my code STG when you sign up. I realize cryptocurrency is still a controversial subject. So if you want to find out more, if you want to learn more, and if you want to get trading, head over once more to Coin Corner. Thank you to them for being back and sponsoring the episode. Let's crack on. Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No.
But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. How you doing, mate?
I'm all right. Yeah, how are you?
You got here, so that's good, considering that the UK is currently going through, would we call it a fuel crisis or a ridiculous situation?
A fuel crisis fueled by the news and the BP people that said they were low on drivers. Basically.
So, yeah, if you're not aware of this, if you're not in the UK, or maybe you are in the UK, but you haven't left your house for a week, you know, fair enough.
Or you've got a telly.
There's a sort of mad situation that's arisen, which is so British of us, which basically, the fuel companies came out saying there's not a fuel shortage, but we do have a bit of a shortage of drivers at the moment. So, you know, just getting, you know, tanks to the petrol stations is a little bit tricky. Yeah. Everyone went, what? Did he say shortage? I think he said not a shortage. No, he said shortage.
Yeah.
Let's go and fill up. So there was then panic buying.
Yeah.
Panic filling it. Stations all across the UK, which then ran the pumps dry.
Correct.
So, I mean, it reminds me of the nightmare that was people stockpiling toilet paper around COVID. Anyway, so we've ended up with this bizarre scenario where now no one can fill up their cars, which almost feels like sort of, you know, Greenpeace have got their way or something. You know?
Like Groundhog Day. Well, at one point last week, I messaged you that I'm actually going to go out and buy an electric car.
I thought he was joking. Like he was, you know, you weren't the only person who made this joke. So there was that meme that was going around being like electric car owners right now and then just grinning. But yeah, you were like, I'm going to go buy. I was like, oh yeah, me too, mate. And you're like, no, so what do you think about the Mercedes EQ? Like, oh, wow, you're actually going for this. So, I mean, have you ordered an electric car?
No, but I am seriously considering it because I've got work, mate. I've got work to do. So I have to be on the road. So anyway, as it stands at the moment, I have managed to get fuel because I'm always out and about.
Sure.
Like motorways, there is a bit of a queue. I managed to get some this morning. Some haven't got petrol, some haven't got diesel, some haven't got both. There are huge queues, but at the weekend as well, I've been in three different cars over the weekend and I filled them all up. Yeah. So I am all right at the moment.
So you're buying into this hype. You had three quarters of a tank, you went, I might as well fill up.
Yeah,
so
you're three different the, cars problem, I filled Tony. Up.
Thank you so much. But no, but I mean, you're right, that fuel is around. The whole thing is sort of mad, but it is possible to refuel. I have to say though, I just want to come back to the electric car thing because, of course, that was a huge part of social media sort of commentary last week.
Can you imagine if I pulled up in one today?
Well, you didn't. You pulled up something else, which we'll come back to. But I actually had a long distance EV experience last week. I can't actually really talk about it yet.
Oh.
It's part of some work I'm doing with Shell, and so lots more will become clear.
I was going to talk to you about
soon.
That today.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when the content goes live. We'll talk about it. But it was a super interesting experience. So that would just be a little teaser as to what it would or could be like.
So
living.
can we? Because some people won't understand why you can't talk about it. Is it because you've got to get it approved?
Yes. So I've been so lucky to work with Shell for like 5 years now, yeah. And they're incredible, and they're always really sort of open to amazing ideas and things like that. And so, of course, the world has changed quite a lot since I first started working with Shell to now. And we've always sort of focused on their motorsport partnerships and of course, V-Power and things like that. So it was like, right, how do we tell the modern day Shell story, or what Shell are going to be doing in the next 10, 15, 20 years? And that has to be part of the EV sort of, you know, story. So yeah, that's what we decided to do. And yes, until everything is fully approved and it's got its ticks and things like that, there's not much point me talking about it, because I might say what we're planning to do or what we have done, and then somebody in corporate says, oh, I don't like that, and then we have to change the idea.
Bit of YouTube insight for you there, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, and this is a sort of marketing/PR, you know, I think if you're in any world of advertising, commercialization, public relations, anything like that, you know, working with a huge global brand like Shell, you know, it's not straightforward. You don't literally just call them up and say, oh, hey guys, can you sponsor my video? Like, it goes through like a whole process, and you've got to sort of tie into other campaigns that are happening globally, so that fits their overall marketing strategy and narratives. And then, yes, there'll be various people that need to approve any kind of activation that's going on. And that goes right up until just before it goes live. You know, you've got people saying, okay, yeah, we like this, you can go. But as I say, Shell have been fantastic, because unlike some brands, they're really laid back.
Of course.
You know, you get some brands who are very restrictive on what you can do and what you can say and how much branding. And I tend to steer away from that because I think it always feels a bit unnatural. Well, Shell is like, cool, let's facilitate some awesome content. I'm like, sounds great. So yeah, that'll be coming soon. Can't say anything else.
And actually, I think quite a lot of viewers would be absolutely fascinated to really know the in-depths, the mechanicals of how your job works. So perhaps one day I sit there and you sit here, you talk to me about cars. I think people would really like to know the real in-depths of how YouTube actually works and what you have to do on a daily basis.
I appreciate that. Two things that we can do off the back of that. So we're going to talk in a second about our upcoming road trip.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hello.
Twiggy desperately tries to get on your lap. I was planning to do a how I make my videos or how to film car videos video during that road trip. But then also maybe we do a podcast. Maybe that is a podcast about, you know, how to be a car YouTuber or... Okay, well,
like sometimes you really grill me on my job.
Sure.
No one really knows, because no one really talks about the real mechanics. And I think for a lot of people, it'd be interesting, mate.
Okay.
Because you obviously
that.
Have some knowledge now, you know?
Sure, okay.
Which is
well,
unbelievable, because you ain't got no hair.
No hair, but knowledge on being a YouTuber. Thank you for the support, Tony. So you didn't turn up in an EV because you didn't, you know, actually go and do that. You turned up in something else.
Correct. And I'd always done it on purpose, because I know that you love them. So I turned up in a blacked out, black pack, three-door Defender.
Defender 90.
90 with 22-inch wheels on it. So absolutely done it.
He walked into SGHQ and he didn't even come upstairs. He just yells from downstairs, you're going to want to come and see this. And then, yes, I did want to come and see it. It looks kind
mega,
of incredible.
Isn't it?
I just still do think they look awesome. But obviously, you're taking that in for stock?
Correct, yeah. Literally just come in yesterday. So it's only done 1,000 miles. So it'll be on the website later this week. So
it's got some nice Chelsea Truck Company bits on it, right?
Yeah.
Wheels and things like that.
Wheels, so. Side steps. It's all blacked out.
Yeah, it looks the part.
Yeah, it's a mega bit of thing, but it'll be on the website later in the week.
I'll be interested to see if you use it. I mean, even just for the journey back, but if you end up using it a little bit over the next 5 days or so.
Well, I will, because I've just filled it up.
Okay. Lucky you. Well, I'm telling you, just rub it into some more people's faces.
Yeah, sorry.
How you get on? Because you haven't spent much time in a 90, right? You had the 110 for a while.
Yeah, I haven't spent any time in a 90. And actually, for me, if I had the... Because I spoke to you about ordering the commercial version. And for me, my personal, what I use every day, I think it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
But like I said, for a family and for everyday use for a family, it's useless.
Yeah.
But for me, for work, to throw stuff in the back, to tow, to just do what I do, the car I've got outside is a P300, which is the 2 litre petrol, which is one of the ones to have because
Agreed.
It's 300 horsepower, it's a petrol car. So I think it would do the trick.
I think so too. It's a sort of single man or woman's car. You
Correct.
Know, it's a sort of tool for an asset, but then I think, as you might find, not always that functional, but still quite desirable. Anyway, I feel like this is becoming the new weekly topic. How Sam still wants to defend a 90, but will never buy one because they're so impractical.
Yeah.
So let's move on. You didn't buy that car for the upcoming road trip, did you?
No.
So yeah, let's get into it because this episode's going to go out on Thursday. And so I probably can reveal that on Monday, you, me and Paul Wallace, Supercars of London fame, hitting the road.
We're going, mate.
Oh, this just feels... I'm sort of almost too overexcited by the idea of it to talk about it in reality. But yeah, we've been planning it for a while. Obviously, from my side, I've been waiting to do a proper international road trip for what feels like forever.
Yeah.
The last one was summer last year with Lotus. I did a few days around Europe. But, you know, even that was such a short trip. This is going to be, well, for Paul and I, 10 days. You're going to join us for the first five, I think.
Five or six. Yeah.
Which will be amazing.
Yeah.
And we won't give too many details about exactly where we're going. Most of you will be able to figure it out or guess because Paul and I only ever really go to one place in Europe. But yeah, we've got a few things planned. Some stuff which you don't know about yet that Paul and I have set up as a bit of a surprise.
Really?
It should be exciting. Yeah. The walkie-talkies are charging just over there. And so let's talk about cars because I'm going to be taking the F-Type R. I want to come back to that in a second. Paul, I'm assuming, is taking the GTR because I don't think he's got
maybe
anything
he's got a
else. What are you bringing? Because you were planning to bring something. Go on. So what were you going to bring?
So we've had a brand new shape BMW M3 come in. And I was absolutely nailed on taking it. But unfortunately, because of the fuel problem, I don't think I'm going to get enough fuel in it to run it in, to get it running in service on time to come on the trip.
So essentially, all you panic buyers out there, you have killed
You've
this
ruined
road trip.
It.
You've ruined it. Because it would have been such a good comparison. We were actually texting about this as sub 100K sports cars.
Yeah.
M3, GTR, F-Type R. What an interesting, all vaguely different, but similar sort of weight, similar kind of power output. It would have been fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, the petrol... petrol pump pricks.
Yeah.
Screwed us over. So what are you going to bring now? What are you going to leave it as a
I'm now going to bring the best sports car you can buy, and I'm going to bring the PDK Cayman GT4. Absolutely done you both.
Well, the podcast audience will be very happy because most of them have GT4s.
Yeah.
You have done us slightly there because I think... Okay, so let me get into it. I just came back from Wales in the F-Type and I went with a GT3 Touring, 901.2, and a 458.
How did you find fuel? Was you all right for fuel?
We were fine, actually.
Okay,
you know, when we got up, I think leaving home, couldn't fill up. So I got there and then we had to find a station, which we did. And we were fine.
It was all right.
We were fine. No major issues. Although we did go to one place and it said, you know, we're allowing customers to fill up £30 maximum to allow everyone to have a go.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's nice. So I went on the app and I'm filling. And then it went past £30. I was like, oh. So I stopped at 35. I was like, oh, God, sorry. My mate being the... Well, anyway, he filled up twice. So he put 60. So he said he was watching the litres go in.
Oh, of course he was.
And it was like 30 litres. And I was like... And he went in the shop and the woman was like, oh, so you're the clever idiot, aren't you? And I was like, oh, God, it's all getting aggressive.
She told him off.
He told him off massively. But... Unsurprisingly, up against a GT3 Touring and a 458, the F-Type
struggled a little bit.
Of course.
You know, roof down, cruising through the Welsh scenery, unbelievable, loving life. Mm. But when we started pushing on, and the two guys I was with were pushing on.
Fair.
The brakes were a bit squidgy. Mm-hmm. The car felt a little heavy.
Yeah.
And the sort of, the dynamic, it was very much a sort of point and squirt car. Like,
yeah.
There wasn't a lot of feel through the corners, if you know what I mean.
Quite numb.
Mm. A lot more pointy than the old car. Yeah. Definitely an improvement. And weirdly, a big step up from the Project 7 I was in the week before, a Goodwood Revival. It felt a lot more sort of competent and together,
yep.
But still a little numb, which surprised me.
Yeah.
And the reason that I think it became more evident is because of the lack of noise. It still sounds great, that new F-Type R, but you don't have the theatre and the drama that I used to have in my old car in the Project 7, which kind of masks some of the, you know, slight weaknesses of it, because you're just like, ah, it sounds amazing!
Yeah, yeah. For me, I think it would be the weight, mate. That is what I would notice the most. Not so much the noise for me. I would notice the steering and the weight on that car.
And so it was the first time, I think, really in forever that I was like, oh, I kind of wish I was in something else today. Like, and that doesn't happen with me in F-Types. Like, no. I adore those things. And look, on the drive back and in photos and when we were just pottering around, I was still like, God, these cars are so great.
Yeah.
And both Phil and Maxi I was with goes, oh, that car's really holding its own today. But I just kept going, I kind of wish I was in a GT4.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and so in the build-up to our trip next week, whilst of course I still can't wait and I'm excited and it's an F-Type back in Europe and it's like mega 2016 feels, I'm just a bit nervous when we get up into the mountain roads, I'm going to be staring at you going, oh.
Yeah, but they're different cars, mate. You
completely
know?
Different.
My car is a ceramic car, but even if it's a non-ceramic car, it's loads more focus. It's loads lighter. It's got semi-slick tyres.
Doesn't have necessarily the persona or the character of an F-Type.
Of course not. But it will. It will turn in better. It will stop better. So, but there will be times on our journey when we're going down a motorway where I want to get out of it.
Yes.
You know.
Or you're desperate for a corner and there just isn't any because you're on the motorway.
Yeah.
And I think this is the thing. You know, this is why I need to. So, since I owned my own F-Type back in the day. Since that, I've driven so many other cars, right? Mm. My understanding of what I want from a car or what a car can do has changed massively. So now spending so much time in the new shape or in an F-Type again, yeah, I'm just a bit more aware of what a car's doing dynamically. Yeah. And I still love them. I still think it's my plan to go out and get another one. But I'm now realizing that actually every now and again, I do want to push on a bit harder. It's not quite as dynamic as I would like. But then maybe I go, well, then I have to take the 360 out on that day.
Yeah, the problem as well with the F-Type is that it is quite old, mate, underneath. Mm. You know, it's not a modern car anymore underneath. I know they've tweaked this and tweaked that, but fundamentally it's not a new Porsche or Ferrari or you know, some other... And even that Alpine thing.
Alpine thing. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's dynamically, yeah, it is a little bit old. And yeah. I think, you know, it's still got massive weight. It just kind of surprised me a little bit. And then when you text me saying, oh, I can't bring the M3, I'm going to bring the GT4, I was like, oh God, it's going to happen to me again. She was from my whole time looking at a Porsche going, oh. So basically my long-winded solution is Project 8. Because then it's, you know, dynamically so much more like dialed in.
Yeah.
I still get on the jet. So anyway, though, I don't really know what I'm doing with myself. But I can't wait for our trip. It's going to be mega.
Yeah.
I think you guys, we will be doing podcasts on the roads. Actually, the next episode will be us somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
Paul will be with us. So I think maybe the next two episodes will be featuring Paul.
Can't we do it in the morning?
Yeah. He doesn't wake up till 11 o'clock. We're dreading, but I think you guys as an audience might be excited about. But let us know. Let us know firstly from the main channel if there's any particular sort of videos or content stars you want us to sort of, what we want to see or want us to do. And then here on the podcast, yes, we're going to have Paul joining us. So, you know, what would you like us to talk about? What would you like us to do whilst we're out and about and on the road? But it should be mega one way.
Yeah, and quite a lot of people have been calling for us to do this for a while. So,
exactly. Yeah. So it should be great.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do was, this episode I think is going out the same day that the new James Bond film is going out.
Oh, mate, I'm so looking forward. Do you like James Bond?
I love James Bond.
Me too, yeah. One of my favourite.
And we've been waiting for so long. Yeah. No Time to Die, isn't it?
Is it your favourite Bond, Daniel Craig?
He's been very good, hasn't he?
I think so, yeah.
But was it Quantum of Solace that was a disaster?
And I don't know if it was a disaster. I just think that Casino Royale was so good that, you know, it's the second one, isn't it?
But when you look at... And it was during the scriptwriter's strike and...
Yeah, when you look at Skyfall, that was very good. You know what I like about...
Skyfall was unbelievable.
Unbelievable, yeah. And you know what I like about the Bond films is that the money they put into the production, the editing, and I don't get it like you. I'm not a nerd about it, but I appreciate like really big budget films that just, you know, that look like
they've got a certain look and feel.
You can tell the difference between a proper film and a low budget film, essentially.
That's exactly, and the production level has increased with the Craig films. They've given it a sort of slightly darker look and feel. Yeah, they're great movies, and I'm so excited for this. And I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to reflect on Bond cars.
Yeah.
Because that is kind of a, you know, for us, I think, or anyone who likes Bonds, the cars are sort of a big part of it.
Yeah. You know what I like about Daniel Craig compared to the rest is that he's come across as... like a real hard man, like a, you know, like a proper assassin. Whereas the other ones were like, although they were assassin, they'd like give you a cuddle before they kill. Do you know what I mean?
No, like, but this is what I like about Bond, right? It's gone through these different eras, these different stages. You know, Roger Moore was very much, you know, the sort of jokey gentleman, you know, sort of sleuth. And then Sean Connery was just kind of cool and the original Bond. And then, you know, you had all that. Pierce Brosnan was very jokey towards the end, sort of almost slapstick kind of action. Yeah. So they've all had these different personas. And whoever the next Bond is going to be, I hope would bring their own something to the role and not just try and copy Craig. But I agree. I've liked this kind of darker, sinister Bond.
Yeah.
And yes, Skyfall, what a movie that was. So very excited for it. But yeah, as I say, the cars have always been a big part of it. And I thought we could just roll through and talk about some of our favourites, or at least remind ourselves some of the Bond cars. So yeah, let's do that quickly now. We've got to kick things off. A lot of people forget that it was a Sunbeam Alpine was the first like Bond car.
When
Dr. No, way back in the day, 1962.
Really?
Yeah, little sort of beautiful sort of roadster type car, Sunbeam Alpine. I mean, cool.
Not
very Bond in what we think of now, is it?
But but just all right, whatever.
Yeah, I think it was the fact that it was made in England at the time.
Back then, mate.
What a vibe.
Yeah.
So we then went through a Bentley. There was a Bentley at one point, was from Russia with Love. Yeah, the Bentley Mark IV. Again, over our heads a bit. And then, of course, Goldfinger introduced Aston Martin DB5. Now, do you see any DB Aston and think Bond?
Yeah.
Pretty much, right?
I think Aston Martin have dined out on it ever since.
Yeah, I think intrinsically linked with Bond.
Correct. Like,
and if you rolled up in that car almost anywhere, even at a car meet, people would go, oh, Bond car.
Yeah, and as much as I'm not a great advocate of Aston Martin, that is like literally like full stop one of the coolest cars ever, the DB5.
Weirdly, I'm going to say this, Bond ruined it for me.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it's such a cool car, and the DB4 GT, the Zagato, were proper race cars, things. And then that's just the Bond car.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's too linked to the movies for me.
Yeah, but it's you know, when like you see one, like, they are a beautiful machine.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And probably amazing to drive.
Yeah.
But just too...
And
too
it still makes an appearance now, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it still pops
in and
out.
Yeah, they've
started
to bring it back, exactly. Yeah. You know, a bit of heritage notice, which I like. Now, this I had no idea. Toyota 2000 GT. You Only Live Twice. It's only right that Bond's first film to take place in Japan should feature the country's first supercar. Aggressive to call it a supercar. But yeah.
Who's called it a supercar?
Whoever
wrote that.
This article. But still a Connery film. So Sean Connery was still Bond. And you know what? My knowledge of the older Bond films isn't fantastic.
Me too.
So I would, you know, could easily have missed this. But this is what I like, is you go through and you remind yourself of some of the amazing cars that have been used in Bond films.
Yeah, yeah.
So we continue then, Aston Martin DBS, which was the more boxy shape. We started getting into the late sort of 60s, 70s, when they took on that more boxy shape, which was great. A Mercury Cougar on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Was that the start of Roger Moore?
I feel like it must have been, right.
Yeah.
Big old Americana car, and we even had a Ford Mustang for Diamonds Are Forever. Yep. That's Sean Connery, once again, reprises the role.
It must be Sean Connery gone before then.
Exactly. MC Hornet. Of course, the Lotus Esprit.
Yeah.
The underwater car. So, what was your first Bond film? Do you remember what, as a kid or like?
Roger Moore was the first real Bond
that you remember watching.
I'm an 80s baby, so okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
One of those. I think mine was Tomorrow Never Dies with Pierce Brosnan, and then I went back and watched GoldenEye.
What's that film there?
So this was The Spy Who Loved Me, 1977.
Yeah, so probably the one after that.
Fine, which would have been the Lotus Esprit Turbo with the skis on the back.
Yeah, probably that
That's for Your Eyes Only, 1981.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty iconic. And didn't Harry's Garage, Harry Metcalf, recreate this recently with taking a spree up
to
the...
I didn't see, but
yeah,
did
it was very cool. Yeah, yeah, cool trip, cool imagery. I always preferred that boxier shape of spree as well.
Yeah.
But they were fairly iconic, I think, as Bond cars.
I remember this.
The two CVs. Is that the one that got chopped in? What happened to
it
the two
CVs? That was the one where they got chased through the woods, wasn't it?
For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah, with the woman in it. I mean, he's always got a woman anyway. Yeah.
Bond is forced to jump into the Citroen CCV driven by Melina Havelock.
That's right.
The squat yellow vehicle does well enough during the chase, but it's clear that certain scenes were sped up to accommodate the underpowered vehicle.
Of course.
Yeah. Eventually the TCV overturns, but local villagers help push them back onto all four wheels again. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Then we got a tuk-tuk in Octopussy, the Renault taxi in A View to Kill.
Yeah, that got split in half.
That got split. Okay,
that was
fine.
A split in half
okay,
car.
That was the split in half car. Yeah. And it looks almost like a sort of boxy old Golf, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what'd that be?
Looks like an old clip top.
Yeah, just a Renault taxi. Okay, yeah. Nice. Then the Bentley, Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud came back in A View to a Kill. Then we had the boxy V8 in The Living Daylights.
Yeah.
Another iconic car, I think, sure. And that had the skis that came out from the side.
Who was the Bond then?
That must have been...
That wasn't Roger Moore, was
Daltrey?
It? Yeah.
Again, I'm so bad with my Bond years and ears.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Timothy Dalton, yeah, sorry. Yeah. A new 007 Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
But I love that boxy shape Aston Martin V8. Yeah. I think it's such a monster.
He's one of my least favourite Bonds.
Didn't he only do it once?
I think he'd done one or two, yeah.
Not desirable. DB5 came back, yeah. GoldenEye Tomorrow Never Dies. And then we bring the sort of BMW era. So
yeah.
GoldenEye, for me, this is the Z3 got introduced and he was out on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, that car's so cool. For me, that really, I was really into...
That was Brosnan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was the whole BMW. So the BMW's really got involved in the...
This is 90s
era.
Now.
Yeah, 95. Yeah. We had the Z3 and then we had the amazing... The 750.
Yeah.
The 750, which like drove itself from the remote control. And
all the guns
drove
the car, and
all the guns. Yeah, and had so much trickery.
Yeah.
That was one of the coolest things I remember. And that, weirdly enough, I was looking back at this a few years ago and I couldn't believe how old and dated that 7 Series looks now.
Correct.
At the time, it was so legit and so fresh and all this kit. But now it's an old 97 Series.
And that was at that point... of Bond films, the Q, whoever the Q was then.
Yes.
He was my favourite
Q. He was the original Q.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, original Q, and doing all the things like, don't be silly, Bond.
Yeah,
And then we had the Z8. So yeah, these three BMWs, iconic because obviously it was my year growing up, but iconic to the launch, pretty impressive cars, right? You know, Z3, Z8, the 7 Series, like, that was big for them to be featured in the cars.
Yeah, of course.
And I still think the Z8, a bit like with the DB5, gets a sort of, oh, that's a Bond car.
It's a Bond car, absolutely.
People get referred to. V12 Vanquish, Die Another Day. That was one on the ice. Do you remember the ice? And they had a Jag XK.
Yep.
And they were racing each other.
That was the Chinese
missiles bloke
with the stones in his face.
Very cool.
Yeah.
For me, though, the moment was this, the DBS V12 in Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Because I remember the hype leading up to that car being featured.
Yeah. Was that not the Vanquish? Wasn't the Vanquish? No,
the Vanquish was the one before
on the ice. Okay.
And then we got the DBS, and that was they launched the DBS in or around the film.
Right.
And he had the glove box with the thing. It was Casino Royale when he gets sort of poisoned at the thing, and then he runs out to the car.
Yeah,
and he's got
remember. That was
his
first film.
And that's the one they rolled. They rolled it a million times at whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I've been down
that road.
Where have you?
We rolled it.
The
test
track, whatever it's called.
Was it Longcross?
I'm having a complete mind. Everyone's going to be yelling at me now, but...
It was either Longcross that the...
where do they do all the Project One testing and stuff? You know, the world famous, behind closed doors, you can't have any cameras in there and stuff. Oh, why am I having a mind blank?
Wherever that was, I've definitely been there, 100%.
Where did they roll DBS Casino? Everyone's going to be yelling.
Yeah, they'll all be yelling. Longcross just comes to mind.
Dunsfold Aerodrome near Guildford.
Dunsfold. Top Gear's track.
Top Gear's track. But I still think it was on... anyway, let's leave it at that because we're dragging this out. No, Millbrook. That's what it is. It was at Millbrook.
It was Millbrook.
It was Millbrook.
Yeah.
It was Millbrook. That's what it
is. Okay, well, I've been to all of them. So, so I wasn't lying.
So yeah, I was right.
Yeah,
so. DB5 came back, Casino Royale and Skyfall. And then, of course, we had the DB10, which was basically what ended up being the new Vantage.
Yeah.
And there's actually weirdly some new Vantages that are starting to creep out that people think are DB10s because you can get that updated grill and you can spec it. So that it actually looks weird.
And
like
we saw the CX-8 Jag.
CX-75
that we thought they was ever going to make, and then they just decided that.
And I saw recently at the Jag Collection.
Oh, did
Jaguar
you see
Classics.
It?
So cool.
Yeah.
So little known fact, which I do feel like maybe we've talked about on this podcast before, the DB10 basically launched Seen Through Glass.
Really?
Yeah.
No,
so
I don't think we ever spoke about it.
Right when I launched Seen Through Glass as an entity... kicked off with Instagram before the YouTube channel started. Mm-hmm. And I was still working, doing PR for film and TV. One of my biggest clients for 5 or 6 years was the Bond films.
Yeah.
And it was, DB10 was Skyfall.
Yeah.
Was yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the unveiling of the cast, they had a car undercover. And I just started Seen Through Glass on Instagram. And so I was like, oh, I wonder what car. So I went, spoke to one of the producers and they went, oh yeah, we're unveiling the new Bond car, but it's a, I just assumed it was going to be a V12 Vantage. Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, it's a whole new model. So the covers came off and I took a load of photos and I posted them to Instagram with all the car hashing, blah, blah, blah. And at that time, I must have had less than 10,000 followers. And I think each photo got about 20,000 likes. And that really launched
that
the Seen Through Glass Instagram page.
So that was 2013?
No, 2015.
Okay, fair.
2015. And and what was amazing was a week later... I had a catch-up meeting with Eon, who do all the productions, and it came up in the meeting.
Really?
Saying, how does anyone know how the DB10 got? Because I didn't leak it, because that would have been unprofessional. But the minute the car was unveiled for the... It was live production. We had Sky News, then we had BBC News. The minute the covers came off...
You took a photo?
I posted the post, because I'd already taken the photos.
Right.
I posted the pictures immediately. So all the news outlets, things like that, were slow, because they were announcing the cars. That was what they were focused on. So none of the car pictures got posted anywhere else for about an hour or 2 hours. So I had the exclusive on the DB10 on Instagram for a couple of hours.
Madness.
So yes, so that really helped launch it. So weird connection there with...
Very weird.
Bond cars. But anyway, so super excited to see. I don't think we know what cars are featuring in the new film, do we? No Time to Die.
Well, there's definitely cars. The DB5 because that
we've seen it in the trailer, right?
Seen trailers, yeah, of that.
So, No Time to Die, 9 cars from the new Bond movie, the DB5, V8 Vantage, DBS, Defender, Drag XF.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Range Rover Sport, Land Cruiser, Triumph Scrambler. But there was a picture with a Valkyrie, so I got really overexcited. I mean, you would think that they would have to put a Valkyrie in there, but apparently they haven't.
Well, it was Spectre, wasn't it, the Range Rovers?
Yeah, Range Rover Sport. Apparently they're back.
They're back.
Oh, Valhalla. Nothing but the briefest blink and you'll miss it cameos thus far for the incoming Valhalla. Supposedly in the trailer there's a shot with Ralph Fiennes standing in front of the Valhalla.
It really?
Yeah. Ooh, interesting. Now I'm excited.
I wonder how much Aston Martin have had to pay them for that.
Well, it's a big, long partnership, isn't it?
Mm.
Anyway, so yeah, we're excited for Bond. We won't be able to see it because we'll... I know, well, you might be able to see it before I go. I was supposed to be going to a screening on Wednesday, but I'm now off to Abu Dhabi.
Oh, what are you doing there? Can't talk about it. It's normal.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to pick up on a topic which actually one of our viewers suggested at the last Behind the Glass Live event. I thought it was a really interesting point that we... Well, I don't really think about anymore, which is how to buy your first supercar. Now, this isn't financially. The point he made was he was coming at it where he'd made a bit of money, decided, okay, cool, I want to go and buy a supercar. But deciding what supercar, experiencing those supercars, test driving them, being taken seriously by dealers, et cetera, was all very difficult for him. Mm. So he ended up buying that really nice 911 turbo, the white one.
Yeah.
9 on 1.2.
Yeah.
He'd never driven a turbo before.
Mm.
He'd driven, I think, a Porsche, but definitely not a sort of super modern, high-end one. He hasn't driven Ferrari, hasn't driven a Lamborghini, so he had nothing really to compare it with. So he's very happy, but he's like, I was slightly shunned by dealers. I didn't really know where to go or where to begin. And I had no reference point, because how do I know if that supercar's any good?
Yeah.
And so I think this got me thinking, you know, what I wanted to address is character traits, what we see as a case. So Ferraris are going to appeal to you if you like X, Y, and Z. Lambos are going to appeal to you X, Y, or Z. Tips for being taken seriously by dealers, independents, or mainline ones.
Yep.
How easy it is to get test drives, et cetera, et cetera. So let's kickstart with, I guess, Gravelwood, because you do every now and again get proper high-end, you know, supercars in for stock.
Yeah, yeah.
How seriously do you take someone compared to, if I call you up and said, oh, I'm looking at the Defender or the Focus RS you've got in stock, compared to, hi, I'm calling you about the 488, the Turbo S you've got in stock.
Yeah.
Do you have a different mentality of people calling in?
Well, we're slightly different because we're independent, and it's really hard for an independent dealer to offer, if they've got supercars in stock, it's hard to facilitate someone with picking what they want. So we don't really do test drives, mate, because we're fairly specialist. People come to us because they know what they want, essentially. So what we found down the years is that if someone wants a Turbo S, they want a Turbo S. They don't really care what it drives like. And to be honest, when someone wants to extensively drive a high-end vehicle and they're not sure, we don't let them go out, because the liability lies on us. If for horrors someone takes one of these cars out and wraps it round a tree, they give the key back and they say, sorry about that, and leave us with a 150 grand car around a tree.
Because it was under your test drive insurance policy, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, things have changed slightly for us since COVID, and because we're not allowed to sit next to people, we don't really offer that service anyway. And as well, us as an independent, because it's owned by me and I've only got one car to sell you, I haven't got 10 Ferraris to sell you or 10 Porsches. Well, I might have 10 Porsches, but I haven't got 10 Turbo S's.
Sure.
Then I've only got that one car to sell you. So if you're just out looking to test drive, go to the manufacturer, go to the main dealer, because they always like to bums on seats.
Okay, you know, interesting.
They want to get people in a car to drive it. They do want... Ferrari are very good at it, Lamborghini. Listen, you have to be serious about buying a car, because no different to me, the insurance is an absolute fortune to have these cars insured, because you have road risk and then you have risk for the business as well. So you have like theft for the business, like a building insurance, and then you have the two separate insurances but lumped into one. So a main dealer as well will be very jubilant about letting people go out just to drive, to make their mind up, because most people, if you want a Lamborghini, you want a Lamborghini. You don't want a Ferrari, you don't want a Porsche, you don't want a McLaren. If you want a McLaren, you want a McLaren. That's what you want. So who cares what it drives like? In my experience, I have never ever buying a supercar, I've never drove it before I bought it, because it's the one I want.
Interesting.
You know, okay. If I wanted a 488, that's the car I want. So it's going to be good. It's going to work. So, and if it don't, then it just goes back to the dealership.
For sure, but I think there's also, that's the thing, you know, you yourself have been around these cars for a while, so you know beyond what you want, what to expect. Mm-hmm. And I think the point being that that this guy made was, okay, fine. So you might think, oh, I really want a turbo. So you go and buy it. And actually, you're not, I mean, you are going to know it's all-wheel drive. But do you see what I'm saying? Where these cars are very different. We keep talking about how similar they are, but a rear-wheel drive mid-engine supercar compared to a rear-engined all-wheel drive supercar compared to one that's practical and usable like a Porsche to a Lambo, which is horrifically unpractical. McLaren's awful infotainment system against Ferrari's very small Apple CarPlay screen. You know, all these different elements which, okay, fine. If you're researching any car to buy in any segment, you would probably consider. But you're right. I think when it gets into supercars, emotions take over. Mm. You go, I want that one for no particular reason.
Yeah.
And there's also that slight sort of fear. You say that, you know, main dealers are always very keen to put bums in seats. But I've experienced it being someone who's not carrying around pockets full of cash. That you walk into a Ferrari, Porsche, Lamborghini, McLaren dealership, they don't always sort of take you immediately very seriously that you're there to actually buy and test drive cars.
But it all depends on what your intentions are, essentially. Don't forget, these machines that you're going out in, they're very high powered, they're very valuable, and from me as an independent dealer, and most independent dealers will be the same, why, you know, I know we want to sell the car, but there is absolutely no way I'm going to let someone go out in a £250,000 car that, you know, they turn up in something that's half the power, they don't really know how to drive it. And actually, I've always said this as well, what does a 5 or 10 minute test drive tell you about whether you want a car or not? There is absolutely no way that you can spend 10 minutes in a car and go, actually, yeah, that's the car for me. I want that car. Because what is a test drive telling you, essentially? Like, if you really think about it, and there's going to be people in the comments saying, I would never buy a car without a test drive. No problem. Don't buy it then. You know, you're not offending me. If you don't want to buy a car from me because I won't let you drive it, no problem. Don't be offended. It's my money, it's my machine, and I don't want to potentially get it written off, because it has happened to me in the past, by the way.
You're having a car getting written
off? I had a long time ago, I had a lad go out in a Fiesta ST and he wrote it off.
Wow.
And then just give me the keys back, which is why I'm very strict with test drives. But I'm not the only one. There are lots of independent dealers, because they're owned by the person involved. When you flip it on the other foot, we're not just here for your convenience, we're here to sell you a motor car. Do you know what I mean? If you want convenience, go to the manufacturer, because they are, if you're serious about buying a car, they will let you drive it.
I think the point being, you know, also times have moved forward. Test drives in my mind were there, you know, the advice when I was growing up or got my first, when I got my license and my first car, you know, I'll make sure you listen for knocks and make sure that the steering wheel's not wobbling, and and you'd go around and kick tires, and that's where that expression came from, because that's, you know, and I'm sure at a low end of the market, you know, if you're buying cars sub 5K, of course you need to be checking on these things. And in general, like, hey, look, if you're going to go and buy a Challenge Stradale, I'm going to give you a list of things that you should be looking at or looking for before you buy that car. Questions you need to be asking. Hey, 996, everyone will tell you, IMS, RMS, has it been done? There's research that needs to be done for sure. But I think what you're trying to say is, nowadays, firstly, cars are of a certain level and standard where there are less of these issues anyway, less that you can hide or pull the blanket over or the cover over someone's eyes. But also, you're liable anyway, right? You're giving some kind of guarantee. Do you see what I'm saying? Well, people are going to say, oh, you need to go on a test drive to make sure that you're not getting completely conned or scammed by the seller into a car that's actually falling apart.
Yeah, so my two answers to that, and we have spoke about this before, but my two answers to that is that no one makes a bad car nowadays. I do get at the low end that you probably need to drive them to make sure they're all right. But even at the low end, no dealer in this country, by law, is allowed to sell you a car with a problem. They're not allowed. And they should have measures in place for them to prepare that car. They have to, by law. If they don't, then they're breaking the law.
Yeah. Okay.
So We as the other thing is that most people that rock up, someone like yourself, you're not mechanically minded. You know, sometimes, mate, I can give you a really good example, actually. The last of the V8 RS4 with the dynamic suspension. they cracked and banged and knocked from New.
Okay,
so
sure.
So we had one from New, or I had one from New, and it went back to Aldi three times. And wow. I said, this is, you know, the ball it's joints mad, are gone. Yeah, this yeah. is broken. And do you know what they said? It's the characteristics of the car, sir. That's what they said. It's a brand okay. new car.
Sure.
So, and I'm not a trained mechanic. It's just got to do it for a job. My cars go in the workshop, like most. They're prepared properly because they have to be prepared because of, that's the law now.
Sure.
And when
so it's changed.
Loads have changed. It's not like the old days where you'd buy a car from a dealer and they'd, you'd have, well, we'd call it lamppost warranty, where you'd have free lamppost and the car blows up, it's, you're on your own. It's tough. Them rules have completely
yeah.
changed.
And as I said, you know, for me, it's basically, over 10 years ago that, you know, I was getting my first car. And as I say, the advice back then was, you know, you're checking for all these too. Oh, you know, go on the motorway, make sure it's not pulling to one side and all these yeah. different things. But look, I think the advice would change or be different if you're buying classic or modern classic supercar, you know, anything from a different era, because there are things that did go wrong, certain things that you need to look into. And my advice there would be heavily do your research. There's amazing forums out there on every single car you could ever imagine. There's YouTube videos, there's written articles, there's buyer's guides, etc. So even from a 360 to an Abarth to a 911, things that you should be looking for if you're going to inspect a car, and pre-purchase inspections can be done and things like that. Of course. But if you're buying from a main dealer, most of them now come with a 150-point, you know, check or whatever it might be.
For sure, yeah.
And I think what I want to move it on to is not necessarily the quality of the car, but more the characteristics. That's, I think, what the point was being made is how do you know, apart from an emotional desire for a car, I've seen that Huracan drive past me, I've seen that F8 in a music video, you know, apart from that emotional, how do you make a decision as a car guy of which car might be best for you? If you are currently in a Cayman, if you're in an M2, how do you know what supercar might be right for you?
So you might not know what supercar is right for you, but you do know as a consumer what characteristics you like in a car.
Sure.
So with some professional advice, and this is where the main dealers sometimes fall down. The main dealers are only normally as good as the staff in them. And some of them
are amazing, but I'm going to cut you off here because you've done this before.
No. I was going to say something nice.
Go on, what were you going to say?
So I was going to say is that they're not all bad. If you find a good one...
Some of them are awful.
No, but some of them are very good and very knowledgeable, but... I'll come back to it.
But can I?
Of course.
Basically, any main dealer is trying to sell you their product. So they no matter what, if they're very good at their job, which lots of them are, they're going to be telling you why an Aston Martin is better than a Ferrari.
But you know the characteristics when you go in. So as a person, as a human being, you know that if you like BMWs, if you like the way a BMW drives, look at a Porsche. Because although they are different, they're driver's cars. Look at a Ferrari. It's a driver's car. If you're coming out of an SVR Range Rover and you're loud and shout, buy a Lambo. Do you know what I mean? It's all about characteristics and what you want. And that's where you need to find a good dealer, because they'll advise you. And there are some good main dealers out there that will facilitate. There are some arses as well that won't give you the time of day. That's unfortunate. That is just... That's all industries, mate.
Of course.
Good and bad.
Of course. But I think you're hitting the nail on the head on the direction I want to go with this chat, which is, you know, what are those characters? What is that persona? Because we sit at it at people who spend our lives in and around cars. We talk about it every week. We come on this podcast. We talk about cars. We meet with people who like cars. We talk
Correct.
About cars. But if you are this guy who works in the city, who likes his cars, mm-hmm. hasn't really had a chance to spend a lot of time in and around them, doesn't have a lot of mates who are knowledgeable about cars. So all he's doing is watching a few YouTube videos, maybe reading the odd magazine, but he doesn't consume a whole load of car media. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't spend his life comparing an F8 to a 911 Turbo S. So as a general piece of advice, you were doing good just then where you said BMWs and Porsche have a similar sort of characteristic, right? Where they're driver's cars, they're fun and easy to drive, but they're usable,
yeah.
they're practical,
yeah.
they're pretty sane.
Yeah.
That does also mean that it can be a bit boring, but we'll move on from that. You said Ferrari as well as a driver's car, but also Ferrari, I would say, you know, it's quite a lot of car to sign yourself up to. You know, they are very pointy front end.
And very different in the fact that a Ferrari, if you need a car for every day, it's out the equation, mate. Then you have to look at Aston Martin, Porsche, which we would call sports cars, essentially, or even a Bentley.
Super GTs.
Super GTs, yeah. If you want a Ferrari, you can use it every day, because they're all very good. You can use them all every day.
Portofino?
And they all make, all these manufacturers, look at Lamborghini, you know, if you want a Larry car, you have an Aventador or a Huracan. If you want something that's where you need to take your family around, which is just as fast, you buy a Urus. It's an SUV, but you buy a Urus because actually on the road, it's just as fast and it's still got the characteristics. We see a lot of people come from Mercedes, actually, that go over to Lambo.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the AMG stuff can be a bit shouty.
Of course.
And everyone has that, you know, me and you, we like Porsche and Ferrari because they really specific in what they do. Although
specific.
Thank you. Although they are different, they are similar in their characteristics that, you know, their drivers' cars and McLaren to a certain extent as well, to be fair to McLaren. There is nothing like a McLaren in the way it drives. They just don't work.
I was going to say, I get asked this so often, but if you can find a McLaren that works, they are fantastic. They are Porsche supercars. They
Correct.
Do everything
very
well.
Yeah.
But they just don't work.
But they're a bit soulless.
They're a bit, but so can Porsches be. You know,
absolutely.
Apart from the GT product stuff.
Correct.
You know, a Porsche GTS is a fantastic car, mm-hmm. but lacking a bit of soul and character.
Same as a Turbo S.
Same as a Turbo S. Yeah. And that could be said for a, well, they don't make them anymore, but a GT or a 720S for the McLaren range.
And the difference between a Porsche and a McLaren and a Ferrari is that you can leave a 911 on the road in London. If you can't really do that with a Ferrari and a McLaren because it shouts at
it's
you
a too
bit
in
more.
Your face.
Correct.
So let's run through each sort of major supercar manufacturer, and I want each of us to give one pro and one con to summarize the car. So if you're saying Porsche, your pro is fantastically usable.
Yep.
Your con is can be soulless, as an example.
Well, you've done that one there. Because that's it.
That's it. Porsche, fantastically usable driver car, can be soulless.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. The easy target, but I'm going to be very pro, McLaren.
But you know as well, another question that I get asked really a lot now, values.
Ah, yes. Okay, inherent
value.
It's
huge, mate. What do you think this car's going to be in 3 years' time?
Well, also, I think people are don't want to lose their money. I think people are aware of how insane the market is at the moment.
Mm. Been asked that for years, though, mate.
So GT3s at the minute. Because after my experience with the touring, strengthened back up. They're 140, 150 grand for a good spec 9 on 1.2.
Yep.
I would suspect they're going to soften off over the next few years. But is that car ever going to drop under 100K?
No chance.
No chance.
Look at the old car.
So if you keep that car for 5 years, worst case scenario, what, 25 grand appreciation over 5 years, maybe?
Porsche is always quite easy, and Ferrari to an extent. Is that once a model is 4 or 5 years old, they kind of find their feet in the market in general. I'm talking in general. There will be odd cars that...
Like the 360. Just keeps going down.
No. But we've spoke about... It doesn't, mate.
And just when keeps going down, Tony.
No.
It does.
No, but we've had this conversation before, and it actually really annoys me that in general... Ferraris never ever lose less than 50% of their value. In general, there will be odd cars.
Sure.
But your car would have been 110 grand new.
Oh, no, that was a challenge for Dali. My car was like 90 grand new.
Right. So it's not worth 45 now.
It was at one point, yeah.
No, but it's not, it's found its feet.
You're right. No,
that's what I mean.
I'm winding myself up, but yeah.
But they find their feet, and Porsche and Ferrari are the best at finding their feet quickly,
yeah,
you know,
and then you know you're into a car which isn't going to fluctuate that much. If you're buying used, it shouldn't fluctuate that much.
You're still going to lose money because there's one thing that the public always forget, and that's the dreaded dealer margin. Mm. If you're part exchanging it, the dealers aren't doing it for nothing. We've all got to earn a living, you know. So just like you all go to work, just like what you do, you don't do it for nothing.
Yeah.
So it's just that because it's a car or a property or whatever, it's high value, people think that it's easy and that, you know, we don't really earn any money
doing
out
it for
of
fun
it. We're doing it, we're just doing
just
it because we like it. Yeah We do like it, but you know, we've got to earn a living.
Course. Okay, so to come back to it, so McLaren, a pro and a con.
McLaren, a pro, nothing else like them. And actually for a supercar, they're very practical. a con. I mean, a disaster. I mean, they just break.
So, pro, I would say faster and more usable than almost anything else in its class.
Yeah.
And as a con, I'm going to steer away from the reliability and say absolutely soulless unless you're at 90% of its ability. Like, you know, up until you're really cracking on, just could be in anything. It's
correct.
A
and will really do its conkers.
Oh my God, you're losing all your money.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I'm putting it in there because it's the one and only Audi R8. Pro and con.
Pro, bulletproof, as in the go-to. If you're ever going to buy a supercar to daily, that's one of them. Because it will, you know, the 2-year, 20,000 mile service intervals is unbelievable for a supercar when you think about it. They just don't go wrong. The con, again, a little bit soulless, mate. Bit Germany. Sorry.
I would say pro is like, you know, yeah, so supercar looks and performance at a theoretically budget price, but even though they're not that cheap. My con is like a little bit of impracticality. The boot is tiny. And bad snobbery. You're buying a car that you feel and think is a supercar and can perform, but if you turn up to most supercar meets or whatever, there's still a little bit of badge snobbery. Not amongst normal punters, but amongst car people.
There is amongst car people, yeah. Absolutely.
Aston Martin, pro and con.
Go on, you go first.
So I would say Aston Martin, you are getting heritage, character, persona of an Aston, that kind of appeal of owning an Aston. The con is they never quite live up to the badge.
Flipping hell.
Come on, find a pro.
Okay, pros. It's got a Merc engine in it.
No.
No, mate, because it works now. I mean,
what about the DBS?
The old one.
The new one. It's not got a Merc engine, does it? It's the bi-turbo V12.
Okay, so, yeah, it's... I mean...
Come on, there's another pro in there.
Honestly, mate, the switch gear inside's 35 years old. It's not, but it feels like it.
Find a pro.
It looks all right.
There you go.
Yeah, they look all right still.
Don't think we need to do cons because you just spent about 20 minutes listing them all.
Yeah. Sorry, man. I can't.
Lamborghini.
Pros. Nothing else like it. As in noise, theatre.
Ultimate supercar. Their poster supercars.
It's an ultimate poster car.
Yeah.
Cons, not that practical. If you're your size, awful headroom. The boot's tiny. They're a bit of a pain in the arse. They have a little bit of a stigma attached to them as well, Lambos, which is why, one of the reasons why I won't have another one. Because
you're a classy gentleman.
No, far from it.
No, but you're right. I mean, I've got not much to add. I think, you know, that when you have the keys to a Lamborghini, it is the ultimate supercar in every sense of the way. You feel like you've got a supercar, like you look like you've got... It's everything. The performance, the sound, the feeling it gives you. But the trade-off is the seriously impractical, very uncomfortable. Just, yeah, I mean, you know...
Although the Huracan, there is an argument that it is more practical, but it's nowhere near as practical as its sister car, the R8, for example, you know?
Sure.
It is a little bit more special to be in. It probably looks a bit more like a supercar. And it does probably drive... That Huracan's probably a bit too good, to be fair. And Huracans or Lamborghinis, they shouldn't be that good.
If it had a bigger boot, it was more comfortable, as in, I guess, the seat or the room inside for me, and it had less of a stigma, I'd be all over Huracan. Mm. All over it.
Fair enough.
Ferrari.
Now, I mean, we could be here a while for pros.
It's the best company in the world.
Well, I'm not sure it's the best company now. I think they've lost their way a bit, Ferrari, and that's a con, as in the way they perform as a company. I think they've lost a bit of specialness, Ferrari, because of the way they behave. They've almost become the mass produced of McLaren,
yep,
kind of thing.
Agreed.
Too many models, a bit, you know, not as special as they were. The pros, flipping hell.
I mean, could be here for an hour.
Honestly, mate.
It's Ferrari. That's pretty much all you have to say.
Correct. If you've never driven a Ferrari, I know we said there's nothing like a McLaren, but even at 20 mile an hour in a Ferrari, and I include the modern ones, mm-hmm. there is something special about looking at that little badge on the steering wheel with a little horse on it. There's just something about a Ferrari.
Yeah, it gives you all the tingles.
The fizz. As James May said.
Exactly, and there's no real way of explaining how or why, but it is a truly special experience. You know, they are fantastic to drive on the road, in our opinions. You know, everyone will be hit and miss. But yeah, you've hit the cons up correctly, that these days is actually... It's less special to own a Ferrari because there are so many of them out there. Mm. You still get the same feeling if you're by yourself, but the chances of you seeing another one within 20 minutes is now becoming increasingly higher. No matter where you are in the world, there just seem to be a ton of Ferraris.
Yeah. And another pro for Ferraris that people often forget is that they are incredibly practical.
Oh, insanely practical.
The modern ones, which is why when someone always says to me, if I've got 150 or 200 grand to spend on a supercar, I always say 488.
Yeah.
Because I know we spoke about it so many times, but it literally just does everything. Loads of headroom. You can drive
huge
it.
Boot.
Huge boot.
Huge boot.
Probably the biggest in its class.
Probably,
for boot,
yeah.
I would say. Just lots of room in it. You can drive it at 30 mile an hour. You still got that specialness. You can drive it 80 mile an hour on the motorway and it doesn't drone like a 458 does.
For sure.
It's incredibly efficient. The warranty and the service packages that come with modern Ferrari is unrivaled. Not even Porsche can touch that, which also helps with the values. That's another thing. That's another pro with Ferrari. The values.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, we can go on, mate.
The list is endless.
Yeah.
So a few other sort of outliers. Merc AMG GT. I would say punches above its weight.
Hugely, especially the R.
But the con is bad snobbery again.
Bad snobbery. Yeah, bang on, you know, yeah.
But and there's not really much else. It's a little bit of a handful in the wet. And a bit stiffer than you'd think.
Yeah, the R for sure. But obviously, we really like that car because you know what it's got that's... different to an R8, because you'd half compare them with a 570S. You know what that AMG GTR has got? It's got a bit of character. It's got something about it.
Yeah, persona.
Bit about it. And do you know what as well? It looks mega on the road. Like the look of them. You know, if you
agreed.
Come batting up behind someone in one, they always move out
yeah.
of the way.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely got presence. Yeah, yeah, insane. Always looks like it's got stance on it. It's mega.
Yeah.
So are we missing any... I mean, you know, we could sit here and go into Pagani and things like that, but we're not going to do that. So I think we've covered off most of the main manufacturers, right?
Yeah.
Porsche, Lambo, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, Audi. We'll be missing a few. Well, I'll tell you what, comment below. If you're watching here on YouTube, let us know. What have we missed?
You got Bentley as well, haven't you? But that's a GT car.
They Super GT, Bugatti, you know, all these things like that. But it's sort of, you know, the main cluster of supercars starting around 150 grand plus.
Missed the NSX.
Our favourite. Yeah, but you know. Oh, yeah, it is an outlier. I mean, hugely underrated and massively capable.
Fundamentally, it's a pile of shit.
And on that note, I think we wrap things up. So yeah, let us know in the comment section below what have we missed out. But what I want to know more, actually, is if you were to go and buy a supercar tomorrow, emotionally, what are you drawn towards? Why? So, you know, as Tony said, a lot of the decisions when you're buying your first supercar, it is just because I want a Ferrari or I want a Huracan or whatever it might be. And if that's the case, why? Why is that the reason? And, you know, have you actually experienced one or whatever it might be? Because I think you're right. First time out, you just go, that's what
I want. You've got to know what you want. You can't go into the market at that end of the market and go, well, I'm just going to drive them all and I'll figure it out in 20 minutes.
They're all as good as each other.
No chance. If you want a Ferrari, you want a Ferrari. If you want a McLaren, go and buy a McLaren. I don't advise it. If you want a Porsche, buy a Porsche.
Yeah, and if you want the Aston Martin, then just go buy the Aston Martin.
For sure.
Don't let Tony swear you.
Yeah. Don't tell me. Yeah.
So we will be back with you next week with Paul Wallace from somewhere in Europe. That's going to be exciting, isn't it?
Where are we going to be, though?
I know, but I'm not going to say.
Oh, we're just going to drop it on us and go, right, guys?
No, but...
We better be in a nice hotel, mate. I mean, I'll be fuming if we're staying in Turnhills.
Have you ever, let Paul Wallace plan a trip before?
Well, I'm a little bit worried because you've been very, very busy in terms of you normally organise it, and you've been very busy, and actually, we was very strict in saying to Paul, screenshot what you're doing. Do not, because he will put us in a turd.
Yeah, I literally, I put in the group a few weeks ago and said, look, guys, I'm sorry, I'm flat out at the minute. Please, can someone else take over this? And Paul's like, yeah, don't worry, I got this. And the other times he's said that or he's taking care of the travel, it's been a disaster. And we are not snobs. I would sleep on the floor somewhere. And I have slept. I've slept in cars. I'm not really caring.
Of course.
But at the same time, it's our first proper international, well, you've been on the Portugal trip, but my first, but I want to stay in a nice place, have a nice time, you know?
Yeah.
Got to enjoy ourselves as well. We're of a certain age now.
Yeah, and we are going to sleep. We are only going to sleep, so we don't need to stay in these plush 5-star plus
hotels.
Although I don't mind. No, no, it doesn't make
a
difference to me.
Yeah.
But you know, like, it's got to be nice and comfortable, nice food at least.
I wouldn't be that keen to share a room with 8 people in a hostel, which is the kind of thing that Paul would book by accident because it got a 4.9 rating on booking.com.
It looked all right.
It looked all right. It'll be fine. Okay, so anyway. So yes, we will see you back next week from Europe with Paul Wallace. For now, if you...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Want to follow Tony? He's on social media at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales. I'm at Seen Through Glass. And of course, if you're watching here on YouTube, subscribe, turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're listening, keep listening on whatever platform you want to listen on. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.